This is episode 19 of season 4 of The Bad Apples. Hi everyone, my name is Klaatu, and this is The Bad Apples, my Linux geeky podcast. And in this episode I'm going to be talking about Qtractor, which I talked about quite a few episodes ago now, and I did sort of an audio tutorial, like how to edit audio in Qtractor. Well, Qtractor has only gotten better, so in this episode I'm going to be talking about how to do MIDI in Qtractor, and dealing with soft synths and soft effects and things like that. I'll also be talking about how to get VST compatibility up and running on the latest version of Qtractor, and I will mention some plasmoids completely unrelated to Qtractor or audio, just some recent plasmoids that I found that I was kind of playing around with and wanted to mention. And that will be about it, so let's get started. So, a couple of episodes ago, quite a few episodes ago now, I did a tutorial on Qtractor. Qtractor being the music multi-track editor and actually sequencer that I've been raving about, I guess, all season long. It's something that I think I stumbled across it on kde-apps.org, and I tried it out, and I just found that it was really, really, really good. I mean, I'm talking Ardour level good, and Ardour is a great application. Ardour was really my drop-in replacement for a long time for, like, Logic Studio and stuff like that. I didn't want to get away from Ardour, but I was looking for a Qt-based equivalent of Ardour. It's really a trivial matter, and if you are looking to do, you know, music production on your Linux box, Ardour is a great solution. So the fact that I'm talking about Qtractor is simply because I can. You know, it wasn't that Ardour wasn't doing anything for me, was something was wrong with Ardour. I was looking for something else. So Qtractor was cool, and I've been using it off and on for different audio mixing needs. And a little while ago I started thinking about, okay, well, I need to get some software synths up and going. So let's talk a little bit about soft synths, or actually even synths, and MIDI, and all that other good stuff. So, as it happens, back in the, I don't know, 50s, maybe earlier, but certainly around the 50s, some people discovered that if they did certain things, and I don't really know what, but if they did certain things to electronic wires and stuff, they could generate tones with electronics. And there was just an Hacker Public Radio roundtable about Forbidden Planet, the movie Forbidden Planet. And there are really, really interesting electronic tones in that movie, and I do mean tones. It's billed as a soundtrack, but since there's no real tune most of the time, it's very experimental, and definitely worth checking out if you can get either the soundtrack or just go watch the movie. It's really fantastic stuff, and it's just if you could think of the phrase circuit bending, that's how it sounds. It sounds like electronics being just abused in beautiful, beautiful ways. So check that out. And that was an example of really early synthesis, and you can get some other examples of that kind of thing with Pauline Oliveira. She did Alien Bog and Beautiful Soup and some other, I guess they're songs, but they're really compositions with very similar kind of bizarre kind of experimental sounds. And these are those, you know, big wall computers. They're not even synths yet. They were just big computers that took up an entire wall, you know, or a room perhaps, and just kind of doing really cool things with them. So check that out is the point of that discussion. Later on, of course, in the 60s, or I guess, again, I'm my history is pretty bad in terms of the actual years and stuff, but the progression of it, from what I understand, is later on they started developing ways to sort of harness these electronic tones a little bit better. And of course everyone knows the name Moog, Robert Moog, often pronounced Moog. These are cool kinds of, you know, these were synthesizers. These were things that could make sounds from electronic from electronics, and you could even shape those sounds in certain ways. And as they developed it even further, they started doing imitative synthesis, where they could literally say, okay, well, here is the sound of an oboe in real life. Now, how can we shape a sound wave from raw electronic output so that it kind of emulates the timbre and the tonality and everything of a real live oboe? And of course, one of the big, pioneers of this was Windy or Walter Carlos, who did the Clockwork Orange soundtrack and did the Switched on Bach series, where she took just a whole bunch of classical music pieces and really worked with the synthesizers to emulate classical music. So she was really working to get a really accurate computer output of classical pieces, and it was an ambitious thing, and you know, depending on who you are, you may or may not think it works, but that's what she was doing. Now, as far as I understand, she was doing that pre-MIDI, and then later on, I think much later on, when digital synthesis came around, which of course would be rather than taking, you know, circuits and or rather you know, tube amps and whatever else is in an analog synth, you know, instead of doing that, you emulate that process, but digitally, so that all your stuff is happening, you know, in chips and stuff like that. So digital synthesis came around probably around the 80s, and that's when they started developing ways to trigger certain sounds. So backing up a little bit. So during the 60s and 70s, when they're doing this analog synthesis, a lot of people, you know, you'll find solo artists. You know, Rick Wakeman has some solo albums out there. Six Wives of Henry VIII, King Arthur, you know, all of his, like, early sort of synthesized solo album. Michel Jarre does his stuff solo. Neuronium, they're a duo, but still. Klaus Schulze, Manuel Gosching, all these synthesizer artists. I've just left out, like, a whole lot of them, but let's just say these synthesizer artists were making recordings with just one person themselves. Maybe, you know, one plus, like, a whole studio crew, maybe. I don't really know what their setups were like. I tend to be a little bit skeptical. They probably weren't really doing this in their bedroom. But what they were doing was they would roll tape, and then they'd play, you know, the bass line. Okay, now that they've got the bass line laid down, they rewind, roll the tape again, or a separate tape, but at the same time as that other tape, right? Or actually, it is the same tape, but it's on a different portion of the tape. It's like a 4-track recorder, or 8-track recorder, but you get my point. So now we're rolling tape, and we're overdubbing, say, the So now we got the melody and the bass line. Now we rewind again and we add some decoration. Then we add, you know, just whatever else. Now we've just done 4 tracks of music, and we've done it completely by sitting there tapping our foot and playing along with our former recording, which is pretty cool and requires a lot of planning and talent, and you have to really know where your music is going, and you have to be skilled at what you're playing and all that other good stuff. So it's neat. But at some point, when they started digitizing their process of synthesis, they realized that they were able to send little signals, you know, ones and zeros, to the chips that were generating these sounds and force these chips to generate the sound on command. So this was called the, I think, Musical Instrument Digital Interface or something like that, which we abbreviate as MIDI. Now, some people who maybe first encountered MIDI on the internet think of MIDI files, you know, as these little cheesy sounding things that play, you know, the theme show of their favorite TV show on a cheap little computer-based synthesizer. And while this is true, I mean, this is MIDI, MIDI can be applied to a lot of other things as well. So in the recording studio, MIDI would be, you know, you would sequence your song. So you would typically, like, turn on your little sequencer, you would play a sequence of notes. You can do it step recording so that you press the note, and then you say, okay, next beat, and then you press the next note, and then you press next beat, and then you press the next note, and when you're finished, you have a completely perfectly timed sequence of notes being triggered. Or you can say, okay, just record everything I press, and it records everything that you press within a certain amount of time. And then you've got perhaps something a little bit more natural feeling, because it's got all your little hesitations and things like that in it, unless you quantize it, in which case it snaps it back to the beat, and it's perfectly timed again. Point being that what you can then do is play this little MIDI file, or this sequence of notes being stored as MIDI, and it sends out the little signal to whatever synthesizer you plug into it. So especially if you're doing it traditionally with, like, a separate sequencer, then you've got your sequencer with all these MIDI sequences in it, and then you plug that into this synthesizer and that synthesizer and that synthesizer, and you've got each different synthesizer being triggered to do different things. And it all depends on how many channels you have and stuff like that. But the thing is that, yes, you can sequence these things so that they're playing automatically without any interaction after it's been programmed by the human. And so you can hit record, and your computer just starts, or your MIDI, your sequencer just starts pumping out all these notes to these synthesizers, and you just record all the synthesizers. So why am I talking about all of this? Well, this is Q-Tractor, modern music. Q-Tractor has a couple of different abilities to what it can do. I mean, it's got the audio side, which we covered a couple of episodes ago, where you press record and you record whatever you're doing from the microphone, or you can import tracks that you've already had recorded by a band, and then you take those files, you import them into Q-Tractor, and then you cut them up, or, you know, throw effects on them, or whatever you want to do. So that's the audio side. That would be just sort of a tape recorder or a multi-track recorder. Now, the other side of Q-Tractor is the sequencer side of Q-Tractor, meaning that it can store MIDI files and play them back for you through your synthesizers. I don't know about you, but after a while, lugging around a closet full of synthesizers gets cumbersome and sometimes just not possible at all. So what I have done quite some time ago, is I got rid of really all my synthesizers. So I've got, like, maybe one drum machine left to my name. But in terms of software synths, these are a little bit easier to carry around. So a software synth, or a soft synth, as people call it, is a synthesizer, usually with just as much capability as the one that you sold off on eBay or Craigslist last month. It has everything that you could do with that synthesizer, but it's just a little 5 megabyte program. So these are really, really cool, and you can get soft synths and soft effect units from a couple of different places. Now, the places that you can get them, or rather, one of the easiest ways to find them is by looking for them according to their type, their format. Okay, so Linux takes a couple of different formats of soft synths. So Linux uses DSSI. I think that stands for Disposable Software Synth Interface or something like that. It takes VST, which is the Steinberg format, which, generally speaking, you're going to find for Mac and PC. You're not going to find for Linux, but there's a note about that. It takes VAMP, V-A-M-P, which I haven't really found any of those yet, and it takes LADSPA, which I have found, and I pretty sure that those seem to be more, it seems to center more around effects in LADSPA than synths. So for synths, I would check out DSSI, and the link for that is dssi.sourceforge.net, and they have a couple of links to a couple of different synthesizers from that site. So be sure to check that out if you're looking, you know, if you're in the market for some software synths. Downloading the DSSI version of those synths simply makes it so that you can interface with that synth easier. You know, you'll actually get a GUI with dials and knobs and switches and sliders and things, and you'll also find that it will be a lot easier to interface from within a digital audio workstation program like QTractor, because these soft synths, when you go out and look for them, you're going to find that they come in a variety of formats. Sometimes some are command line only, some like Fluid Synth, I think, is a command line. Actually, let's talk about Fluid Synth, because this is a good example. So Fluid Synth exists. It is a command line based synthesizer. While that's nifty and kind of cool, it's just not it's not all that useful all the time. So someone developed a front-end for it in Qt 4 called QSynth. So if you download QSynth, it acts as a front-end for Fluid Synth. And again, that's kind of cool and neat. And it can talk to other applications via jack, but I don't really love doing it that way. But it can be done, but it's not as easy and fluid as other methods. So someone came up with a DSSI interface for it, for Fluid Synth. So now you've got DSSI Fluid Synth, and you can plug that in. You can open up QTractor. You can say, okay, I want to use the Fluid Synth thing, and it pops up right within QTractor. So you've got QTractor, and you're right within QTractor as a plugin, really. You've got the Fluid Synth interface, the DSSI Fluid Synth interface. So this is really good. And actually, I don't know if there is a DSSI Fluid Synth interface. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's a good example that you can get something as a command line, you can get it as a standalone synth, and you can get it as a DSSI sometimes synth. So if you see the DSSI version, I would opt for that if I were you. Where to find these synths? One place, of course, is slackermedia.info or straightedgelinux.com/slackermedia. This is my Slackware multimedia project that I've been kind of working on lately. It's got a couple of different links to good repositories full of this stuff. But really, it just links you to other repositories. So the places that one of the best places that I've found is called Planet Karma, which is spelled Planet CCRMA, but pronounced Karma. And if you just Google that, and I'll include it in the show notes as well, but it's Planet Karma, CCRMA. And this is a package repository for Fedora 10, Fedora 11, and CentOS 5, I think. And essentially, it's just a big repository of all the multimedia, audio applications out there for your Fedora or CentOS box. So you kind of go there and you can just grab all the RPMs from there and install them, and you end up with a pretty healthy audio workstation. So basically it's Slacker Media except for Red Hat and Fedora, which I found fairly recently when looking for DSSI synths. So check out that. If you're using Ubuntu or something like that, you probably just want to check Ubuntu Studio or Studio 64 if you're a Debian person, or I guess Studio 64 now does Debian and Ubuntu or something like that. I don't really know. But yeah, check those things out. So you'll find these things all over the place. There's not a super, you know, mothership kind of central location of them, but you can definitely kind of find them in some key areas if you look around. If you're looking for Slackware, then you can actually use Planet Karma and just use RPM to TGZ, and you get pretty good results a lot of the time. So what you do is you download these synthesizers, and again, I'll just go with DSSI because they're, like I say, really one of the easier ones. So you download the DSSI synth, let's say DSSI Y-Synth, DSSI X-Synth, DSSI Fluid Synth, if there is such a thing, I forget, Hexter, DSSI Hexter, DX7 emulator, different synthesizers. You download them and you install them. They install themselves into usr/lib/DSSI, or if you're doing LADSPA effects, they go to, I think, usr/lib64/LADSPA. That's where they should be, at least on the Slackware box. Just look around usr lib or lib whatever, and you should find them. Now, in QTractor, you can go to the view menu, and go to options, and then you can tell QTractor where to find these plugins. So if you've got a DSSI synth that you want to use, you should tell QTractor where your DSSI stash is. So you go to view options, and then it's the the tab labeled plugins, and you can select, okay, DSSI, and you can tell it exactly where those exist on the system. So there might be some in user local lib DSSI and some in user lib DSSI. So you add those to your path, and now DSSI will always be searched for in user local lib DSSI and user lib DSSI. Now, if you go to, if you're looking for LADSPA synths, or effects rather, then you'll tell it, okay, so, you know, LADSPA is located in user lib64 LADSPA. So, telling QTractor that, you say okay, and then you're done with that. You never have to do that again. And now you are ready to make MIDI-based synthesizer music on QTractor. So, how to do that? Well, first thing you'll want to do is open up a new empty QTractor project. Save often, of course. So you open up a new project, maybe you save it right away, and then you hit New Track. That creates a new empty track, which just basically says, okay, we have an open mixer channel now. There's a track with nothing in it yet. So great. So if you hit up if you hit the mixer, which if you're using my keyboard shortcuts, which are really good keyboard shortcuts for QTractor, a lot better than the default ones, you just hit M for mixer, and then the mixer window pops open. If you're not using that, I think it's in, like, view, and then mixer. But once the mixer is open, you will see that the track you just added to your main view in QTractor also shows up in the mixer window. Oh, and by the way, all this stuff is online at straightedgelinux.com. That is straightedgelinux.com/QTractor/how-to_QMIDI.html. And of course, I'll enclose that link in the show notes as well. So anywho, you got mixer window, you got one track in there. Now, you'll see the title of the track, which let's say I haven't called it anything, maybe it's called track one. So right under track one, there's this empty gray box. It looks just like dead space, but it's recessed. It looks like a little box. So you right-click on that, and a drop-down menu, or a pop-up menu, rather, pops up. And the first selection on there is Add Plugin. So you hit Add Plugin, and a new window is going to pop up. And this is the Plugin Selection window. The Plugin Selector is looking at the folders that we've defined. So it might default to LADSPA, it might default to DSSI, it might default to all, I don't know. But it will be looking for the synthesizers in the location, in the paths that you defined it when we went to view options. So select whichever one you're looking for, or just do all, and then have a look around, see what synths you have available to you. Now, me, I install DSSI, the CAF plugins, C-A-L-F, it's like a baby cow, CAF. And I think those are, I don't know the link to those, but I'll enclose those somewhere. But those are mainly effects. There's a couple of little synthesizers in there, but mainly they're effects. And then I've got, I think DSSI itself comes with some sample synthesizers. There is an Xsynth plugin, DSSI plugin, which is really good. A Ysynth DSSI plugin, which is really good. A Hexter DX7 emulator, Fluid Synth DSSI plugin, and probably a couple of others that I'm not thinking of right off the top of my head. But let's start with Ysynth, because it's a really kind of diverse one. So select Ysynth, and I guess you say okay to that. And then you'll see right away Ysynth's little interface pop up. Now, Ysynth's interface starts out in the most basic interface possible, which is basically a list of patches, which, you know, patches are the kinds of sounds that you can use on your synth with Ysynth. You can generate from Ysynth. By default, Ysynth comes, at least if you compile it from source, comes with like 300 or something like that preset. I mean, this is really, really good. I mean, that's like a lot of sounds that you can generate, all kinds of different ones. So right away, if you're looking for a quick fix, you just want to get in there and start playing around with some music stuff, QTractor plus DSSI Ysynth, fantastic solution, because at this point we're ready to make music. Now, if you're looking for something a little bit more advanced, you can go to the Edit menu in Ysynth and go to Edit Preset, and it will help you, I mean, it will show you the advanced interface of Ysynth with all the knobs and switches, with about 15 tabs of different properties of each sound wave that you can modify. There are like four oscillators, there's LFO for each of those, there's all kinds of different things. There's different filters you can pipe it through, effects, just whatever. So you can definitely modify the sounds. You can really, really go crazy with it. If you don't do that, then you can just use their presets. So let's say you found a good sound. You find a good sound that you like. You can send test notes if you just hit the send test note button. So you can actually get a feel for what each preset sounds like, you know, without actually having to commit it to anything. So now you've got your synth plugged in, you know, you've got the plugin loaded up into QTractor, selected your sound bank, your patch. Now all you need to do is make a new clip in QTractor. That is to say, you need to create some tape there to lay down your track onto. Because right now all we have is a track, and we have the plugin assigned to that track, but there's no data there yet. So a new clip will give us some data. So you do a shift in, again, if you're using my shortcuts, it's shift in for a new clip, because that's a fairly common thing that you're going to be using. It's good to have a smart keyboard shortcut assigned to that. So you say new clip, and it opens up a window for you to name your session. This is just where all the MIDI data is going to be saved to. So you can name it synth MIDI file directory. You can send it to whatever your music directory, you know, you're using for all your stuff. Of course, good organization here is vital. You do not want to just save it to any random directory, and then later you decide that you need to archive all this stuff, and you archive the QTractor stuff without your MIDI data, and then it's all useless, isn't it? So be careful, you know, try to do this smartly. Make a music folder, composition folder, whatever, QTractor, something, so you can save everything into a consolidated place. Point being, you create your little session file, and after that, it's going to open up a little matrix editor or a piano roll or whatever you call it. Logic, I think, called it a matrix editor. I think perhaps other people from, like, older applications call it piano roll. Point is that there's a keyboard vertically positioned on the left, and there are spaces where those notes will be triggered on the right, and across the top it's each, you know, beat, and it's divided into eighth notes or quarter notes or however you want it to be divided and whatever your time signature is. But there's a little pencil tool up at the top, and you use that to draw the little boxes that will trigger the different key on the keyboard. You'll hear the notes actually being triggered as you do this, and if you have an effect on that track, you'll actually hear the note as it is affected as you're doing this. So it's sort of a what you hear is what you get in a way. You can do loops with this, or you can do whole compositions with this. It just kind of depends on your methodology. The cool thing is that since this is all MIDI, there are actually a couple of different kinds of MIDI signals that you can send to a synth. You know, initially when they came out with MIDI, it was just, okay, turn this note on, turn this note off. You know, those were the two signals, right? They started progressing a little bit, and they thought, well, we could also send cool things like pitch bend data to the synthesizer. So we could have the note start at a, you know, a full E, and then kind of have it bend down to a D sharp. You know, something like that. So you can actually do that here, too. You can send velocity, pitch bend, I forget what else. Those are the two that I use, I guess, the most. So those are the ones that I can think of. But the way that this is done is there's a little section at the bottom of this little matrix editor, and it mirrors every note that you have up at the top. There's a little thing at the bottom as well. So if you select from the drop-down menu, okay, I want to modify some note velocity data, then you can go in there, and it looks like a little bar graph, and you can make first note of the first bar a little bit heavier, and the fourth note of the first bar a little bit heavier or louder, you know, stronger, I guess, by just simply increasing the velocity of that note. So you can get in there and really kind of customize it and make it sound less computerized if you want to. And there's always options as well for quantization and things like that if you want it to sound more computerized, or if you just feel that you've messed up if you're playing it in yourself or whatever. So lots of different options there. When you're finished, you close that window, and it's going to ask you, well, do you want to save the changes? Yes, you want to save the changes. Otherwise, nothing will be in the clip. So you save the changes, and now you've got this little clip in your track of little bars, which, of course, represent the notes. And if you hit play, then you will start hearing YSynth playing all that wonderful music that you've just composed back to you. All you have to do from that point is add another track and add in some more MIDI data, and then you've got a couple of synths playing back your composition to you. And you can just keep doing that until your computer refuses to process all that data anymore, and now you've found out the limits of your computer. The other thing that you can plug into tracks are the effect plugins, and these work exactly like the SoftSynths. And once again, you can actually download these as standalone effects units, or you can download them as either DSSI or LADSPA plugins. Big famous one that everyone knows are the Steve Harris plugin. This is by some guy named Steve Harris, who apparently sat down one day and just pumped out like over 100 plugins, effect units. His are really great. I mean, you download his and you're kind of set for life, probably. He's got reverbs, echoes, delays. Actually, he doesn't have echoes, but he's got delays. I guess they're kind of the same thing. harmonizers, choristers, phasers, ring mods, just everything you can think of. It's really fantastic. EQ, different kinds of EQ, compressors, gates, limiters, everything you can think of. So you download that, you're set. Those are LADSPA plugins, so you'll find those in USR lib64 or whatever /LADSPA. So let's say that we did this first track, right? Want to put an effect on it. So if we go back to the mixer and we right click on that little gray box where our Ysynth is right now, we can add another plugin. So you say add plugin, and then when the plugin selector pops up, you simply point it to your LADSPA directory and choose which LADSPA effect you want to process that track through. Keep in mind that the order of effects are going to matter. For instance, if you want to do a reverb and you also want to do a gate, if you put the reverb on first and then the gate, well, the reverb effect will be gated. Whereas in the opposite order, if you put a gate on first, then you're doing the gate on everything, and then you've got your little cutoff drum beats or whatever you're doing, and then you put that through a reverb, and suddenly you've got these cutoff drum beats being reverbed. So, big difference in order of effects. So keep that in mind. That aside, you select which LADSPA effect you want, and then the interface for that LADSPA effect will pop up, and you can modify your properties and play it back and hear your track through that effect unit. The other set of plugins that I use a lot are the CALF plugins, CALF. I don't know the link off the top of my head. I'll put it in the show notes. They have, I believe, LADSPA and DSSI versions. I use the DSSI version. I don't know why. I just like the DSSI interface. I could be mistaken, but it seems like the DSSI ones look a lot more, I don't know, a lot more friendly than most of the LADSPA ones that I've seen. So I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just doing LADSPA wrong or something. But DSSI gives you lots of pretty things to look at, so that's what I use. So if you do the CAF DSSI set, you can use those. And like I say, they also happen to come with some synths, so that's kind of nice. But the CAF ones come with a lot of cool effects too. You know, again, just delays and echoes and reverbs and stuff. Compressors, things like that. And now effects are plugins, but they don't have to be MIDI. You can put them on MIDI tracks, you can put them on audio tracks, it doesn't matter. That's something that's just placed. You're basically plugging the output from that mixer, you know, that track's output cable, you're plugging it into your effect box over on your rack, you know, and then you're plugging the output of that effect back into your mixer. If it's sound being generated by Q-Tractor, or if it's sound being passed through Q-Tractor at all, whether it's MIDI generated, you know, synth generated, soft synth generated, being triggered by MIDI, or whether it's actual audio, an audio track, you know, of your voice or of an instrument or a sound effect or a sample or whatever, it's going to be affected. So, and that's per track. So you can have a reverb on track one and a compressor on track 2, and a ring mod on track 3, it doesn't matter. The limit is your CPU, how much data it can process and still play it back for you at a reasonable rate. So remember to save, and save often. Q-Tractor is still alpha software, still. It doesn't feel like it, except when it crashes, then it feels like it, but I have really good luck with it, so. Some of the CAF plugins are really nifty. I included some screenshots of them just for fun, gratuitous screenshots on the tutorial, straightedgelinux.com/Q-Tractor. /Q-Tractor will take you to the audio tutorial that I did for Q-Tractor, and then there's a link at the bottom and within the text of that tutorial to my second one, or you can just go straight to the second one with straightedgelinux.com/Q-Tractor/how-to_qmidi.html. That's all lowercase. So that's how you do it. And believe it or not, it's pretty darn robust. I mean, you're gonna find that it's pretty much what you'd expect out of a music program. I mean, a lot of people seem to be saying, oh, well, there's no you know, GarageBand for Linux. And well, you're right. There is no GarageBand for Linux, thank goodness. But there is Q-Tractor, there is Ysynth, and that's really practically all you need. You hear my Nokia battery dying, sorry. But yeah, that's all you need. I mean, literally, like, if you want to sit down and start making music in an afternoon, go grab Q-Tractor. Yeah, it needs to be the latest version of it. Grab DSSI Ysynth, install those two things, and you're up and running in no time. So not quite a loop-based program, QTractor, but there's a paste-repeat function, so that if you have a loop that you do want to play over and over again, you can copy that clip and then paste-repeat, and it says, okay, how many times do you want it to repeat? And you say, okay, 4 times, and it pastes that thing in 4 times exactly concurrent to one another, so there's no interruption in rhythm or anything like that. So, I mean, there are ways to make it a little bit more loop-based, and like I say, with some good investigation, you can find all the different samples and pre-built loops that you want. They are definitely out there. A trip to the bookstore will get you some right away. Simply go look at a computer music magazine or a future music magazine or any of these kind of specialty, like, synth kind of magazines, and they typically, just like the Linux magazines that you love, they come with DVDs, and on the DVDs they come with like 2,000 samples sometimes. It's just that simple. Over time, you start to collect quite a library of royalty-free pre-built loops that you could use in kind of a loop-based composition setting. The other way is simply to purchase them, just a big DVD set of all different kinds of loops. Not something I'm really into, but it's definitely, building up a loop library does kind of help sometimes for those quick fixes when you just need a cool-sounding beat and you really don't have the time or the concentration to sit down and try to design your own cool-sounding beat. Now, Computer Music Magazine, as I've mentioned on Linux Cranks, I think last week or this weekend, or this past weekend, Computer Music issue 144 is going to come out, I think, in November, and there's going to be a feature piece on building a Linux sound studio. So if you're interested in this kind of stuff, that might be an article worth checking out. If not to live by, then at least to see what they suggest. You never know. It's going to be interesting to see their take on the whole thing, given that they're traditionally a PC and Mac kind of magazine. Ubuntu User Magazine, which is a new magazine being put out by Linux Pro Magazine, they actually featured a kind of like making music on your Linux box article as well. I kind of skimmed it. It's Ardour-based, I think. It looked like a pretty good article, so you might want to check that out. I don't know if they do as great of a job as I've done here with these tutorials and here's how to get soft synths up and running and stuff like that, but I think the more information you gather about this stuff is generally better, so check out Ubuntu User as well.
Coffee.
So the only other thing I really have on QTractor and the whole MIDI thing is VST support. And this is kind of a big deal because VST was a plugin format that was developed by Steinberg, I guess. And it was one of the, at least, I mean, as far as I remember, it was sort of one of the first software synth kind of plugins for a digital sequencer. I could be wrong, I haven't looked that up, but it certainly is one of the most popular, and at one point there were other formats as well. And even now there are some other formats, obviously, DSSI, LABSPA, things like that. But in the PC and Mac world, there, I guess now there are two predominant formats. There's VST and Macintosh's AU. VST being the big one for, I guess, the one that's been long-standing, you know, Pro Tools and things like that. So, the fact that QTractor can understand VST format to some degree is a big deal, because those are the two big formats of the proprietary world. Realistically, if you're a recording artist or if you're doing music or whatever, you might find it quite helpful to have one of these VST synths. When you're an artist, you know, you want to kind of have all the tools available to you. So having the VST compatibility really opens up some possibilities. So in order to do that, you have to get a developer account at steinberg.net. So go to steinberg.net. I think it's like third-party developer or like developers, or, you know, it's you'll see a link on the page to, I think it's called third-party software or something like that. And in there, there's an opportunity to sign up for a for a developer account. It's free. It doesn't really entail anything more than giving them an email address and a name. So do that, and then you can log in. They'll send you an email back, and you check the email, and then you go back to VST. You only have to do this once, and you even only have to go to this website once, so you can feel free, at least in my opinion, to use a disposable email address. I just use 10-Minute Mail, you know, get their confirmation email, go back to the Steinberg site, log back in, and then you can download either the 2.3 or the 2.4 VST SDK, the Software Developer Kit. And then you download that, then you unzip the source directory, which, you know, let's say you put it into your /home/clat2/code directory. So you go there, you unzip vstsdk.zip or whatever it is, and then you copy that. That's going to unzip into a folder called vstsdk2.4, inside of which there's a folder called plug interfaces, and then inside of that there's vst2.x, and then inside of that there are two files, aeffect, so it's aeffect, and then I think it's like .so and .la or something like that. So you can copy, I just do aeffect wildcard, you know, asterisk, and you want to copy that to /user/local/include. And that's what you need to do. So again, that's copy vstsdk2.4 /plug-interfaces/vst2.x/aeffects*2/usr/local/include. So that will copy the necessary, I guess, the libraries or the shared object files or whatever they are to your system directory, so that then QTractor can kind of use that to start the VST compatibility layer or whatever. So from there, when you just go ahead and install all your VST plugins, just be sure to pay attention to where you're putting them. Just like with the DSSI Sense and the LADSPA effects, you want to kind of know where they're going on your system. And then in QTractor, you can fire up QTractor now. You can go to View Options. You can select Plugin tab. And then on the right-hand corner again, there's that little drop-down menu that says, okay, what are we looking at? Select VST and define for it where your VST effects are being stored. Ideally, you're putting them all onto one location on your hard drive, so point it to that. And now next time you insert a plugin into your mixer, you'll have VST options as well. So KDE, of all the nice and pretty and really, really fully featured desktop environments, you probably have heard me say before that KDE is really my favorite. If I'm not doing multimedia and I'm just doing normal computer work, I'm probably doing that normal computer work within KDE because I really, really like it. Multimedia work, I like to save the resources and I just use Fluxbox, or I guess eventually I'll install Enlightenment again and play around with that, E17. But for now, it's KDE if I'm not doing the multimedia stuff. And I have to say that KDE 4.3 is really nice. Other people have probably given reviews of 4.3 already, so I'm not going to go too far into it. Know that the notification system has developed quite a bit. It has been sort of a method of KDE that whenever something is occurring, you know, whenever there's some kind of like a copy dial, you know, copying, and it wants to tell you, okay, you know, you're 50% done, you're 75% done, all these little notifications pop up over above your system tray, and then a little info logo appears in your system tray while that process is going on. In 4.3, you've got that same thing going on, but you've got a little bit of a progress wheel in the system tray as well, while these things are going on, so you can kind of see that the tasks are still running without clicking on it and like actually bringing the notification boxes up into sort of the full view. So that's nice. And by the way, that notification system is brilliant. I remember, I don't know, before 4.2 came out, I was saying, and this was right around the time that Mark Shuttleworth was saying sort of a similar thing. In fact, he said it like 1 week after my show came out or something, which leads me to believe that he's listening to my show and is copying my every move, but or maybe not. But I was saying that, like, notification boxes were really, really bothersome, right? Because they pop up, and you, if your eyes aren't exactly where they happen to pop up, then your eyes are searching the screen for them, or, you know, they get hidden under another window, and it's a nightmare. I hate those stupid pop-up dialogue things that happen. And I still think that they could take it like one step further together and like just move every single pop-up window, with probably very few exceptions, to the little notification area where there's this little series of boxes that will pop up right above your system tray. Wherever your system tray is, it will pop up and show you, okay, here's your, you know, hey, you need to type in your password for your K-Wallet, or hey, you need to confirm that you want to run this as root, or just, you know, whatever. It's just one consolidated physical space for, or rather screen real estate space, for all the notifications or the pop-up dialog boxes or whatever they are. That could be neat. But anyway, the point is that currently they've really made huge progress in that area. And that's one of those areas where, like, if Linux completely just went away, like all the developers stopped working on it, and I had to go back to Mac OS X, that is something I would miss in a big way. Those notification things happening all in one consolidated area. So that's a very nice feature. Another feature is a lot of Plasma work. You can now, well, there are little plasmoids for just playing movies and audio files, so you don't really have to have like an audio player open necessarily. You've just got like this little container that you can drop your stuff into and it'll play it. That's kind of cool. You've got the whole desktop being sort of a Plasma hotspot now. You can actually define your entire background to be, well, you could define it to be a movie, you could define it to be Marble, or K-Marble, or whatever it is. It's basically KDE's version of Google Earth. And you can literally, I mean, you can click on your desktop with your mouse and move the Earth around the globe, you know, like go around the globe, make it bigger, smaller, whatever. Really, really neat stuff. So anyway, in terms of, I guess, usability, there are two plasmoids that I found recently, and they're not actually specific to 4.3. I was running at least one of them on 4.2, and I think even 4.1, to be honest. Don't really remember. But they're just nice little plasmoids to get. I found them on KDE Look, kde-look.org. So this is not KDE Apps, this is kde-look, even though they are like plasmoids and they kind of feel like apps to me, but apparently they're part of the Look. So kde-look.org, look for one thing, or actually just Google it, look for YAWP, YAWP, which, let me start up, I'm going to start X here, which is yet another weather plasmoid, and hopefully I haven't mentioned this before on the show, I probably have, but it's a really nice little weather plasmoid. I don't know why they don't adopt it as the official one for KDE. The current KDE, like the one that comes bundled with stock KDE, is like the weather LCD plasmoid or something, and it's this really, really big white box with black letters of the different weather things going on. This one is really nice. This yet another weather plasmoid is fairly themable. You can make it different colors. They have different themes included with it and stuff like that. And it's a lot smaller than the default weather LCD plasmoid or whatever it is. I mean, yes, you can shrink both of these down. I mean, they're scalable and everything. But this is really, I mean, if you look at it, you're going to see that it's actually quite nice. It's really nice. And it shows you the preview of the next coming, you know, the next few days, the highs and the lows of the weather. You can set it to use either Google Weather or AccuWeather, just all different kinds of functions. And it just looks really nice. The other really interesting one is called Daisy. Now, Daisy is a dock, okay? But the cool thing about Daisy is that you can make it a dock, you know, floating, at, or rather, anchored at the bottom of the screen, anchored on the side of the screen, top of the screen, wherever you want it. It has reflection functionality, you can change the background, you can do the whole Mac OS X Leopard / Sun looking glass, you know, shelf, that little 3D shelf look. You can do just a little, you know, a nice little, sort of a, what would you call it? It's more like an, you can make it just a translucent sort of bar behind your icons, stuff like that. But the cooler thing is that you can make it floating, so it doesn't have to be anchored to the side of the screen. And an even more interesting one is the circle view. And this is not quite as cool as I was hoping. I mean, I thought, I was kind of expecting something really looking glass-ish, but you can basically make this dock into a circle, and the, you know, there'll be a center icon, which I think is for your applications, like it'll bring up a list of all your applications, and then you can have the, you know, your launchers around that, and then as you launch new applications, it adds it dynamically to the dock, just like normal docks do. So it's a really interesting view. It's called the Daisy Wheel, I guess, or something like that. It looks pretty nice, and it's not that I love docks that much, and I probably won't actually use this that much. It just kind of caught my eye because I saw the circle, and I thought, ooh, maybe it spins and stuff. It doesn't spin or twirl or anything like that, but it does sit there on your desktop looking like a cool little circle of applications that you can launch from, which just kind of seems unique. But I was looking at it, downloaded it, compiled it, tried it out. It's just a dock, you know, it's a normal dock, but it does have a lot of options. Maybe not as many as AWN, you know, the Avant Window Navigator, whatever that one is, for GNOME, or I guess it's not for GNOME, it's just, I guess you can use it for other stuff as well. But, yeah, maybe it doesn't have as many nice features as that, or as many eye candy-ish features. I've never really liked AWN very much. I feel like it never acted the way I wanted it to. So when I saw this probably still doesn't act the way I want it to, but maybe I'm just not, maybe I've separated myself enough from docks at this point, not having used the OS X dock in such a long time that probably I've just kind of forgotten the way it works. So maybe it's just a fresh look at the concept of docks. Is this much more than you can also just make a dock with a kicker, right? You can just say, okay, add a panel here, throw some application icons on there, and now I've got a dock. And that's true, but it's also not true because it's not going to dynamically add the application that you're running. So this does that. This will add the application that you're running, and if you click on that icon, it will take you to the desktop and to the application that you've just clicked on. So it's kind of nice. There's no clear indication of which ones are launchers versus which ones are applications that are running, really. They could use like some kind of separator, I think, for that. But aside from that, it's great. It's a good little dock. And if you want to really just pimp out your KDE desktop and make it look, you know, fancy and stuff like that, this will do it. This will do the trick. It looks really fancy. All of the backgrounds are pretty nice looking. I just like the plain bar, but I did some screenshots of it as the little looking glass shelf and sent that around to some people I knew who, you know, use OS X, so trying to impress them with the beauty that is KDE. So yeah, check that out. That's called Daisy, and I'll include links to both of these in the show notes, but again, if you Google yet another weather plasmoid or just YAWP or Daisy Dock, maybe Daisy Dock, Daisy Wheel, I don't know, for KDE, both of those should bring you to kde-look.org. Daisy also has their own website, so you can check that out. That's it, I think. That's my KDE Plasmoids picks for the week, which you'll never hear again.
Right track.